What is God calling you to do? What is the one thing you were born to do? Are you truly doing what you're called to do? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Callings for Life at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose.
I wish we taught more in our schools about the Islamic faith. I wish we talked about all the great confessional faiths. And what people don't realize is one of my avocation is theology.
It's interesting that the sort of like traditional American leftism is clashing with, you know, millennial progressivism.
The Reformation was not a revolution. And thinking we have to take on and imitate the worship styles and practices of non-sacramental Christians is very dangerous.
I think the first thing is just knowing the arguments about the truth of the matter. That's why shows like yours, Issues Etc., are so important, because you're equipping people to make the argument.
Iowa State University computer science graduates love Issues Etc.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
When you hear the word Reformation, your mind usually goes to 16th century Germany. Especially when you hear the word Lutheran Reformation, almost exclusively to Germany. But was there at least an attempt at a Lutheran Reformation someplace else? Of course, the Reformation was taking place in a lot of places, not just Germany. One of the places we don't think about that much is the Reformation in England. And it had a lot of political intrigue. It had a lot of ups and downs, backs and forths. Of course, as reformations usually do, it also had a martyr, Robert Barnes, burned at the stake. And that after only years before being a special emissary, even called the royal chaplain to King Henry VIII, that king would later execute him as a heretic. How did he get from the king's court to the stake? And how did he hear about Lutheran theology and attempt, at least, to spread it in England? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about 16th century Lutheran martyr Robert Barnes. The church remembers him on this day. Dr. Jeff Bleininger will be our guest. He has a PhD in English Reformation from Cambridge University. We'll spend some time with Pastor Paul McCain in our second to last installment in our Lutheran Confessions series today, the Solid Declaration of the Formula of Concord on what they call other factions and sects. What's the difference between a faction and a sect and just outright heresy? We'll be talking about those Anabaptists and anti-Trinitarians, among others, with him. Then Michael New joins us for something of a pro-life roundup. We'll talk about the Hyde Amendment, the effectiveness of pro-life laws worldwide, the expanding access to chemical abortion, especially expanded during the pandemic, and a Gallup poll on pro-lifers and how they vote. In the last half hour of the program, Michael New will be our guest. Joining us to remember 16th century Lutheran martyr Robert Barnes, Dr. Jeff Bleininger. He has a PhD in English Reformation from Cambridge University. He's university pastor at Concordia University, Chicago, author of The Issues Etc., Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. Jeff, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here with you and chatting with you once again.
We don't usually associate martyrdom with the Reformation, but if you would talk about how the Reformers, almost all of them at one point or another, had their lives on the line for confessing the faith.
Yeah, they would be confronted on two levels, on two different hands. On the one hand, ecclesiastical authorities, but in a lot of cases, especially in England, there was also the state itself was very much invested in purging of heresy. If you can kind of imagine heresy being described like a disease, like the plague, well, what do you do with people that are being infected by the plague? We want to prevent that, and then you burn things too. So the burning of heretics was very much carried out by the arm of the state. And that really is applicable to England in the 1520s and throughout the Reformation, depending on which ruler was in charge and what his or her particular theological perspective was. The English Reformation figures were very much at risk and sacrificed their lives frequently throughout the period.
Talk about what was happening in England during the early phases of the Reformation, religiously and politically.
You can't get past Henry VIII when you chat about the Reformation in England in its early phases. We could spend a whole program talking about Henry VIII, which I would love to do sometime. But I think what you have to think about is in the early 1520s in England, Luther's writings are being brought into England, especially Cambridge University. But it's not spreading really dramatically. And in fact, early on, we know that Henry VIII, the monarch at the time, opposed Luther and even wrote an assertion of the seven sacraments against Martin Luther. And as we know, Henry VIII received the title Defender of the Faith from the Pope for attacking Luther. So in the 1520s, it's coming in through the universities and through merchants. Reformation teachings are, but it is really opposed from the top down. What happens and changes politically is Henry VIII famously wants to divorce his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, and marry Anne Boleyn. That begins to cause him to sort of oppose the papacy, the power of the papacy. It has him encouraged to examine the scriptures and the patristic resources, which are now made available because of the Renaissance that's happening. And then that sort of gets connected to the Reformation movement in England, but it is always tied to the mercurial moods of Henry himself and his vastly changing theology and depending on which wife he's sort of trying to execute at the time. So it's a really tumultuous time if you're a figure like Robert Barnes.
Who was Robert Barnes and when does he make his first entrance into the Reformation controversies?
Robert Barnes was an Augustinian friar. He was the head of the Augustinian monks in Cambridge University. And who else was an Augustinian? Was Martin Luther. And in 1525, in the early 1520s, the scholars in the Augustinian circles and other scholars are reading humanistic sources like Erasmus, and they're beginning to read Martin Luther's works. And they're gathering at this place called the White Horse Inn, which people are quite familiar with. That's sort of like a pub, and the image is that they're under the cover of night and they're reading these illegal sources at this pub. And a lot of this has been elaborated by history, but there was a White Horse Inn, and we're certain that Robert Barnes was there reading both Erasmus and Renaissance sources and patristics and the writings of Luther. Well, what happens is in 1525, he preaches a very controversial sermon at a church called St. Edward the Confessor. What's amazing about this church is you could still go there today in Cambridge, England, and the pulpit is still there. So I've got a picture of myself standing in the pulpit for the first Lutheran sermon that was ever preached in England and in the English language, 1525 on Christmas. That sermon riled some feathers, especially as he was opposing one of the church wardens of that parish. But it was a unique situation because the particular parish didn't fall under the jurisdiction of the bishop. It was called the Royal Peculiar, and that meant that it was supervised by the monarch and not by the local bishop. So it kind of gave them a little bit of freedom. But that sermon he preaches really starts to get him into trouble because he preaches against the abuses of the church. And that leads then people to begin to question him, and he even gets arrested by it and is released. And then at one time, remarkably, he even fakes his own suicide in order to escape. So it's a wonderful history about this early reformer in Cambridge, England, in the 1520s, beginning to preach reform and beginning to preach Lutheran teachings.
How does Barnes end up in Germany eventually?
Well, he has to flee England, and that is largely due to the fact that he was promoting the publishing of William Tyndale's New Testament. And it's kind of strange for us to even imagine, but at this time in England, it was illegal to print and publish and disseminate an unofficial New Testament in the English language. And so he gets in trouble for doing that, and he has to flee over to Germany. And that's where he comes into contact then with Bugenhagen and Luther and Melanchthon.
Tell us about, I think it's a genuine friendship between Luther and Barnes.
Yeah, after Barnes' death in 1540, Martin Luther writes some very affectionate and positive things about Luther. Of course, you would expect that. Here we have a fellow reformer, Barnes being eventually Lutheran in the confessional sense, and so you'd expect Luther to say some affectionate thing. But we certainly believe that they were at table together. Luther had a nickname for him. Luther talks about sharing beverages and meals together. And so we do believe that there was a genuine affection and friendship that the two of them had together. Barnes was living with Bugenhagen, but then certainly had shared table with Melanchthon and Luther.
What do we know about Barnes' theology from some of his writings?
We know that he was committed to justification by grace through faith alone, in a real Lutheran sense, from his writings. It's always tricky to kind of determine when do these reformers really come to a full understanding of the doctrine of justification as we would know it and articulate it from the Augsburg Confession. We even can ask the question, well, how Lutheran was Luther early on? So it's a little tricky to kind of determine, well, when did they really come to this understanding? Early on, Barnes is very much concerned about reforming the abuses of the church. He's concerned about getting the scriptures into the language of the common tongue of the people at the time. He's certainly opposed to the papacy, but at some point he certainly comes to a very clear understanding of justification. Another thing that we can learn from Robert Barnes and what we know about him is that he was also very strongly secure in the real presence. And that even got him into a little bit of controversies with his own fellow reformers in England, such as William Tyndale. In fact, there's a letter that I like to point out with folks about this, that the other reformers say, let's just not talk about this because Robert Barnes is going to get really mad at us if he really knows what we think about it. So Barnes, through the influence of Luther, but also his own studies of the scriptures, were very strong about the real presence in the Eucharist, in the Lord's Supper. We know also that he was strongly, caustically against the papacy. He even kind of had a review of history, a relearning of history, very disparaging about the papacy, as we might expect. And he was able to articulate the distinctions between justification and sanctification, that he understood that the works were important, but that they didn't save you. So quite a good theologian. And as I've said, Lutheran in a confessional sense by the end of his life.
Why does he then return to England?
It's a great question, and it's just a fun history, is that, as I said, you follow Henry VIII and his different moods and his different wives and his different sort of theological perspectives. What happens in the 1530s is Robert Barnes, having studied with Luther, having a friendship with Luther and Melanchthon, knowing some German, having a previous life as an Augustinian, that becomes very useful to the crown, to Henry VIII, and especially a chap named Thomas Cromwell. Not the Oliver Cromwell that happens later during the English Civil War in the 1620s and 30s and 40s, but this is a Thomas Cromwell who is the King Henry VIII's chief minister and secretary, and is promoting the Reformation, although he's a controversial figure in himself. But in any case, Robert Barnes becomes very useful because here you have someone that knows the Lutherans, knows the language, knows the theology. And so when they want to begin reaching out to the Lutherans about Henry's divorce and maybe getting support, Barnes is very useful for that. And then later in the 1530s, when the Schmalkaldic League is developing, Henry VIII and Thomas Cromwell think, well, maybe we can line up with the Schmalkaldic League in opposition to some of the Catholic powers in Europe. So Cromwell becomes very useful for that purpose as well. And I think also in the early 1530s, the English are trying to figure out their own theology. They haven't developed their confessional documents yet. They don't know really who they are. And so I think there was some sincere openness by the English reformers and perhaps even Henry himself to say, well, what is this teaching and what is justification? And perhaps this Robert Barnes figure can be helpful for us in the development of our own confessional stances.
We're talking about Robert Barnes, a Lutheran martyr in the 16th century. When we come back, he makes it into the court, so to speak, of Henry VIII. What would his position have meant? Dr. Jeff Leininger is our guest. What is God calling you to do? What is the one thing you were born to do? Are you truly doing what you're called to do? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Callings for Life at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive word and sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Lutheran Talk.
We have an ecumenical responsibility to hold forth the scriptures and to bear witness to grace alone, faith alone, Christ alone.
Lutheran Music. Listen anytime, anywhere in 2020 with the Lutheran Public Radio mobile app. Download for iPhone, Android, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.
Bahama Mama, Ocean Pacific, Paradise Island. Retreat from the heat with a shaved ice snow cone from Tropical Snow in Caseyville, Illinois. It's right across the street from Collinsville High School. Tropical Snow is open weekdays from 1 to 9 and weekends from noon to 9. Premium snow, epic flavors, lots of love. Tropical Snow, across the street from Collinsville High School at 2134 South Morrison Avenue in Caseyville.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, remembering 16th century Lutheran martyr Robert Barnes. Dr. Jeff Leininger is our guest. He has a PhD in English Reformation from Cambridge University. He's university pastor at Concordia University Chicago and author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. The print edition of the latest Lutheran Witness magazine arrived today. The theme is religion and politics. It contains columns on social media and politics, having hard conversations in a meaningful way, reading and watching the news as a Lutheran, and more. Check it out at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness is available in print and online, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. The Lutheran Witness magazine, cph.org/witness. Jeff, in 1535, Barnes was named as royal chaplain to King Henry VIII. What would that position have meant?
Well, unfortunately, what it doesn't mean is that he was hearing Henry's confessions and leading him in morning prayer and, you know, designing worship at the court. This is really an honorific title that was useful for the negotiations with the Schmalkaldic League and the Lutheran princes. So they put it in the letter that he's Henry VIII's chaplain, and that maybe gives him a little credibility in order to, you know, serve as an effective ambassador, basically. So unfortunately, I'd love to be Henry VIII's chaplain too. That would be a very interesting job, keep you on your feet, of course, hearing his confessions, but that's not really what was happening with Robert Barnes. It was really a title that would be useful for work as an ambassador to the German princes.
Did Lutheranism in any way gain a foothold in England?
In the early 1520s, the term Lutheran, of course, is a very broad, elastic term. Basically, anybody that wasn't Catholic or opposed the teachings of the church at that time was considered a Lutheran. So in that sense, we have certainly some inroads by people like William Tyndale and Robert Barnes and others that are bringing new learning, new thoughts, both from the Renaissance, but also from the teachings of Luther. So in that sense, there are some inroads of Lutheranism in the broadest definition. In terms of its actual, the confession of the faith, as we might think about it in the Augsburg Confession, unfortunately, later England turns a little bit more towards Calvin, much more towards Calvin and Calvin's theology. So there is a foothold in the sense that there's an openness to ideas. There's a foothold in the sense that Henry VIII at certain times is sort of infatuated with what this new teaching, how it might be useful for him, basically. But in terms of an actual confessional stronghold, the English Reformation turns more towards Calvinism.
So how does Barnes go from this kind of useful servant ambassador to the Schmalkaldic League from Henry VIII's court to being burned at the stake?
When in doubt, blame Henry VIII. As I mentioned, Henry's mercurial moods and his theology were really hard to predict. And in 1539, he pushes through and gets past this thing, which is called the Act of the Six Articles. And this was intentionally against Reformation teachings. Transubstantiation is enforced by burning at the stake. In fact, you're not even allowed to think anything but transubstantiation. Justification is condemned. Justification by grace through faith is condemned. Priests are not allowed to be married. So in the late 1530s, 1539, and then into the 1540s before Henry VIII's death, you have this lurch back to the sort of Catholic perspective. Then there's political and theological reasons behind that, which are debated by historians. But that gets Robert Barnes in trouble. The curious thing about it is that he knew it was happening and he still went back to England. And the reasons of that were maybe he was a little naive. On the other hand, I think the teaching of justification had become so important to him. This is just my opinion, that I think he really felt called, that he needed to return to his homeland and to be in some way a conduit for the proclamation of the gospel in the English language.
Do we know anything about his final days or his last hours?
Well, he was burned at the stake, and sort of remarkably, on the same day, three Protestants were burned for preaching justification, and three monks were beheaded for denying Henry VIII's supremacy over the Church of England. So Henry VIII was quite ecumenical about who he burned when. We do know that he was very much committed to his faith, and that throughout his life, understandably, he tried to avoid martyrdom, as was expected. But this just became a situation where because of the fall of Thomas Cromwell, the king's main minister. And that's related to the beheading of Thomas Cromwell because of the marriage to Anne of Cleves, which that failed, you know, the Lutheran princess that Thomas Cromwell was encouraging Henry to marry. Because that fell apart and because Thomas Cromwell lost standing and was beheaded, Barnes went down with him, unfortunately. But we do know that he remained true to the Christian faith, that he gave his life for the faith, and he, to this day, remains an incredible martyr to the Reformation faith, to the ideals of our Lutheran confession, but especially for the ideal of justification by grace through faith.
If people wanted to learn more about this Lutheran martyr, Robert Barnes, what would you recommend?
Yeah, there's a little bit of misinformation kind of out there in the blogosphere. We actually have an LCMS pastor, Dr. Corey Moss, who is the world expert on this topic and wrote a book called The Reformation and Robert Barnes. And the only thing I have against Dr. Moss is that his PhD is from Oxford. That's the other place. But other than that, the guy is just great. So The Reformation and Robert Barnes is the definitive word. And it covers his biography and his theology, and Barnes also as a formative church historian. So that it's an excellent text, and I highly recommend it.
Then how do we best remember Robert Barnes?
He was a historian. He was a reformer. He was a theologian. But beyond any of that, he was a man that understood his own shortcomings, his own sin, and clinged solely to the cross of Christ for salvation. I'll just share a quote of his that I think illustrates this. He wrote that there is none other satisfaction unto the Father but this, Christ's death and passion only, that no work of man did deserve anything of God, but only Christ's passion as touching our justification. For I acknowledge the best work that I ever did is impure and unperfect. Wherefore, I trust in no good work that ever I did, but only in the death of Jesus Christ.
Dr. Leininger, you are the author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. Tell us about the book.
This book is really this great Lutheran doctrine and insight on vocation or callings made practical and relatable to lay people. It's a way of us really steering clear of some of the misunderstandings and some of the myths in our society and in education about the term vocation. And it's a way for people to really, I think, embrace the fact that God is already at work through them because of the gospel right now in the different places and spaces and situations that God has called them.
You can purchase Callings for Life online at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Jeff Leininger has a PhD in English Reformation from Cambridge University. He's university pastor at Concordia University Chicago and author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. Jeff, thank you.
Thanks. So glad to be with you.
We will be into our Lutheran Confessions series on the other side of the break. We're in the Solid Declaration of the Formula Concord. Nearing its end, we'll talk about other factions and sects with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our study of St. Matthew from exile back home, the Savior's birth, wise men from the East, worship of the King, and flight into Egypt. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
Historic St. Paul Lutheran Church in the heart of Austin, Texas is glad to support the work of Issues Etc. I'm Pastor Brian Wolfmuller, pastor of St. Paul, and I'm glad we're part of this effort. Issues Etc. for decades has been the premier voice of Lutheran doctrine and biblical teaching in all of the world, and we're glad to be a little part of making sure that the work continues. If you're ever in Austin, stop by and visit us. All the information is on the website, stpaulaustin.org. That's stpaulaustin.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Expert guests, expansive topics, extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario. Faith Lutheran, Capistrano Beach, California. Grace Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Peace Lutheran, Hastings, Nebraska. Risen Christ Lutheran, Arvada, Colorado. St. John Lutheran, Strongsville, Ohio. St. Peter Lutheran, Arlington, Wisconsin. And University Hills Lutheran, Denver, Colorado. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.